Welcome to the Magic Hour, a safe haven for lost stories and curious folk.
Yeah, today we're talking about black holes in particular. And it wasn't even that long ago that our world got our first view of our own black hole in our galaxy. And we're going to try to flow through the conversation of today within the framework that we exist as symbolic artists. And we're science enthusiasts. And I feel like artists are really important contributors to this topic. And we're going to expand on that, as well as cover off what we know and love about black holes. So welcome.
Oh, black holes, I love you.
Yeah, why? Why do you? Let's start off like right away. Pixie, why do you love black holes?
I mean, many, many reasons, but I thought I would pull into this a quote that one of the scientists I was watching a documentary about black holes said, and she said, "We will need new physics to explain what goes on in a black hole." And I think the idea of "we need new physics" is a really, for some reason, really compelling phrase. Mm. The idea that a physicist, a scientist is like, yeah, this is cool, but we need more physics because this is totally blowing our minds. And so to sum it up, I think what this is it's the mystery of them.
Mm-hmm.
They represent what we don't know yet. They feel massively important to our existence.
Indeed they are.
The more we learn about them, it seems like they're a part of the actual functioning of where we are, like of our whole system, the planets, the universe. It's like we're understanding our very basic structure in this large scale. And I do think that initially my real obsession with them was probably because of Interstellar, because Interstellar really got us to go in one.
Yeah.
Using real physics, like using real theories and things that they had figured out in math.
Yeah, it was touted as really, really good science.
Because Kip Thorne, he's the scientist, right? Yeah. And so I think that really got me kind of brainstorming and using my imagination and realizing that is what science is about. Because that's how all the ideas start. It's like, well, what could it be? What would it be? And you use your imagination and see where it lines up.
Yeah. And I think we have like a concept or maybe a hint at what we know about, you know, scientific theorists and hypothetical science as being like really out of reach or, you know, even more inaccessible for like non-scientific based communities. But in fact, there's this really important bridge that happens between artistic depictions of things that are currently unknown or impossible to validate except by theory. So like art is a really important thing. It's always been a suitcase full of things that help deliver either emotion, reality, history, hope. Like art does all of those things on behalf of whoever the person is. Like we can deliver the story to you as artists. And I think art and sciences is a perfect marriage. Interstellar is a really great example of that. I particularly love the fact that I would not be able to tell you the difference between the theoretical artistry and the, okay, we've gotten an artist to visualize really complex, bulky things that we know to be true thus far. Like, I wouldn't be able to tell you the difference between the two. And like you were saying earlier, like, you know, fiction and reality are not necessarily stranger than one another. They're both.
No, truth is actually stranger. The more we learn, the less we know, I guess, is the phrase. And when I watch these scientists talking, a lot of my sources right now are from, I've already like sent this out in my newsletter and talked about it to you, but it's from 2015. Like it's from a little while ago.
Right. You've got,
it's called How the Universe Works.
Yeah. That was HBO, but you can find it other places too, but How the Universe Works, and they have like little mini chapters on different things, and there is one on black holes. And
yep,
they had a woman scientist, which I mean, still to this day, that's still a special thing, right?
Yeah, and the way they're talking, they're so, I mean, like, in love with all of them because they're like little kids. Like, they're sitting there talking about this thing and they're like, this is the theorem, we don't know. And they make nerdy jokes and like, and they make it accessible and they make you involved. And because I'm a visual learner, they have these beautiful depictions of things.
Yeah.
Backed with real things that are happening. Like, for example, these pictures that we're going to share in our show notes of what we've captured of the shadow. It's a new photo, the newest photo of a black hole from galaxy M87. Like, we have a photo of this, mm-hmm, that proves something, one of Einstein's theories, by the way. And so all of it together is a wonderful learning experience for me. And so one of the things that I love, like I said, is seeing the giddiness of these scientists.
Yeah.
But like, they know what they're talking about, but they also don't know, and it makes them want to know more, and it makes me want to know more. It's very intoxicating.
I mean, it's not like any scientist can make scientific theory accessible and fun and relatable. So I think they did a really good job of casting scientists that were full of glee and humor and mirth. And then, like, if I think about like the kind of steps or stages of like figures in science that kind of act as the gateway between children and the public, you know, that's a skill. That's a beautiful, beautiful skill. And you really remember the scientists and teachers that make those things accessible for you. So, like, big props to that very niche skill of being able to not just hold really complex information and be studying it, but also be able to tell that story. That's a skill set. That is a unique, magical thing to like actually make it sound engaging when it really is. You know, we don't mean to be dry or obtuse when we talk about science. It's kind of hard to be both like brilliant and entertaining.
But proving itself to be wrong when I look at these other resources now that can appeal to us in this different way. And also like the diversity of voices that I'm seeing in these documentaries of every race, gender. And it's like, you can see yourself in the sciences and like,
well, it does take a team, you know, to like, to yeah. like technological enablers who would otherwise be working on, you know, robots or whatever else they'd be working on, but pointing them in this direction, allowing it to be amazing and multidimensional.
Yeah. It just makes me happy to see more voices contributing. And to me, it's like hopeful because the more like young people see people that look like them working in this field, the more they might get into the field. And I like,
yeah,
part of me, I don't know. I feel like if I had thought it was possible, because I felt like math was unattainable for me. So the sciences was right out the window for me in terms of a possibility. But I loved earth science. I remember I did. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I wonder if I had had a bit of a different experience, if I would have gone into theoretical physics. I don't know, because I think theoretical physics would have been what I would have done. I was digging into that whole branch of study, mm-hmm, because it's different than just the math. It's like conceptual.
I think they're important
in some ways, artistic.
I agree with you there, and I think unpacking all that you're talking about is a combination of like unnecessary gatekeeping, labeling of what excellence and what achievement is. So instead of individual excellence, as in, oh, this child is, you know, adept or excellent in science, so we will put them into a course for excellence. But if a learning community were centered around what kind of environment would be crucial to have the most expansive and exploratory potential for the sciences, for the maths, for the artists. So if you have a combination of all those people learning together, you actually get a deeper output. You know, and that's why, you know, a lot of people's studies and papers are, you know, behind tomes, they're behind paywalls, because nobody's working together per se as like a standard. It's like an exception to the rule when you have an artist working with a theorist or a musician working with a astrophysicist. I mean, there's all these potentials. Like, we've seen these incredible examples of communities creating new things, like the, you know, we know what soundscapes are possible in black hole theory because you have data modelers working with sound engineers. Like, if you like load that up into the educational settings where people are working together, then you don't get that sort of like individualistic excellence, and then everyone else is just left behind.
Yeah.
Mic drop.
And if I feel like if I had learned about, I mean, we hadn't discovered it yet, but if I had learned about black holes making sound, I would have been hooked, and maybe I would have pushed myself on the math. I don't know. Like, for me, when we've talked about this before. I was so excited when it came out and we shared it on the podcast.
There's a website on the Universe of Sound, which is like a collaboration between different scientific communities. And what it is data sonification. So it's the process of translating data into sound. So it's not as if it's just like, oh, we've recorded a black hole making noise. No, this is like massive, huge amounts of data from telescopes and satellites all across the world. And then data modelers and engineers trying to figure out, how do you create a sense like hearing that allows you to translate what we are actually capturing? So it is complete fucking art.
It is. And that's what I loved about it. When I found out how they did it, I was like, this is, and they were thinking about, I think they were thinking about people who couldn't see too. That was mentioned in the articles, that it was a way for people who couldn't see to still understand aspects of the universe too. They could hear it.
Yeah, as a literal,
I love that they were thinking of that.
Totally.
It's great.
Like, literal accessibility, but also understanding that, like, the way that you monitor is through multiple senses. And so, like, sound being a really important way for you to analyze. Because from what I understand about black holes, sometimes it's the way that objects around it behave that allows you to identify what's going on. So, like, even just, like, listening to the sound of the listening to sound on and then hearing the volume differences in pitch allows you to say, like, oh, something's happening there. And so that moment in Contact where she's just got her headphones on and it's just through this like this static pulse, and something changes in the static pulse and she identifies something. That's what that is.
That's one of my favorite movies, and you just made me want to watch. You made me want to watch it again. Like,
so I'm glad that you've been enjoying those. That was a long-winded way of us to like sum up the fact that like making science accessible in documentary form and in, you know, children's programs and songs and all of these different ways. It's a really wonderful gateway that allows people to engage with the sciences and for it, you know, and then for it to continuously be funded. I mean, it's a virtuous circle, right?
Yes, it is. And it's essentially understanding our source. So it's like such
Which is what we do as artists.
It is what we do as artists. And we help to give voice to things that are hard. Like, we give voice to numbers. Like, you know what I mean? Because a lot of this stuff is based in numbers, which I do not understand.
Right.
But I'm endlessly fascinated by. I mean,
but those
the math
numbers
teachers I work with blow my mind all the time.
That's just like a layer of a language.
Oh yeah.
So like the zeros and the ones are, that's one layer of language, but then that's not the only option.
Yeah.
And it can easily be translated into other sources of language, like you said, sound and visual.
Yeah, and again, like the way they explain it and talk about it in this particular documentary or, you know, show helps me start to understand it. Like, I had eye-opening realizations watching it. I tend to watch it when I'm taking a bath. So I'll just like lay in the water and be like, wow.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool that you can be in water and be watching something about the cosmos.
Yeah, I put on my iPad.
That's
yeah,
a very cool wonderful. Combo. I like that idea a lot.
Right?
Yeah.
Actually, there's this thing that we should get that I found. This is totally a side note, but you can apparently put it in the water and it like will put like project stars on the ceiling. So you'll be in your bathtub and there'll be like the sky around you, like a projector.
Oh my God.
I got it. I got to make that happen.
That sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Where to from here?
Well, I have more reasons.
More reasons why you love. Yeah.
Yeah. Love letter to a black hole.
Mm.
Love Pixie. Well, black holes are like, it's like they're a god. It's the birthing place of all creation, and it eludes our understanding. And also the fact that it also plays with time, and the idea that time is a thing and that it's relative. So when you learn about what black holes do to time,
mm-hmm.
like the closer you get, time slows down and then stops ultimately. And they actually call it in some ways like a time machine, because you'll see, I think you'll see what already happened, like when you get in there, theoretically, what they say. And so I was thinking a lot about how time, a lot of the time, feels not as strict as we make it out to be. Like in the day to day, in the formulation our society has made, it's like 9 to 5, go to bed, like, and you're like following these strict rules, but it's not really, we just make it that way. You know, and you notice when you're on a break from work and you're not functioning within the traditional confines, time feels different. Sometimes I forget what time it is and I don't know what it means. And also like flow state, to think about time shifting. Think about when you're making art or you're listening to music, you're at a concert or you're doing something that changes your perception. We always say you lose track of time.
Mm.
I mean, that's actually happening. That means, you know, we're processing it differently. Mm-hmm. So I think the idea that black holes edit and alter time like that, and that we're realizing that time is an element, like a thing that changes, it makes me feel excited that it's more flowy than we thought, that it can be adapted and changed. It makes me feel freer in a way, that I don't have to adhere to these rules.
I just want to recognize the fact that that's a really unique feeling that comes out of you. Because for a lot of people, especially people of voices that I've been listening to right now, like people who have chronic health conditions, they say that thinking about the largeness of space and the vastness of some of these theories are actually really scary and, you know, elicit kind of like a depressive experience. So like, it's just nice to be able to hear different reactions from our community, where there's room for you to be lit up by that. And I think that's really beautiful. Like that is your love letter.
Yeah, it is. But at the same time, I go through phases of fear too, because it is so mysterious. It's like there are some times in my life when that feels too big and I have to put it aside, because it does get laborious to carry. So I know I can relate to that feeling too. But when I'm in a more open state where I can handle it, it thrills me. It makes me feel like there's all kinds of possibilities. And in that vein, just like this, like, ecosystem we're in an ecosystem that's not just on the planet, but a part of something much, much larger. And so like they're saying like, you know, rules, like when something starts spinning, they're saying everything in the universe, all mm-hmm. of it spins. Mm-hmm. And once things start spinning, it keeps spinning.
Mm-hmm.
Also gravity, being not just on Earth, but like gravity is a part of the black holes, like everything's sinking, like it's so heavy. And so like, the way our bodies behave, the way we function in the world, the way things work, like naturally in our actual planet and then in the universe, they're all like related and they all like do similar things. And I think that that makes me feel like we're part of this. I don't know how to explain it, but the only thing I could think of was you guys know those pictures, I'll post them. You'll see them on like social media sometimes, but someone will post a picture of like neurons and then the universe, mm-hmm. or they'll post a picture of a black hole and the human eye, or they'll post a picture of a cell and then a nebula or something.
Yes.
Like on macro and micro levels, we are like weirdly identical.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something really important about that. That's not something, that's not coincidence. That's like, that's the fabric of us, of who we are. We are like
validation,
not that different.
That we're the, yeah, we're natural, which I think in a, in an overly mechanical, and overly, capitalized world, remembering that we're natural phenomenons is probably a really important anchor point for us, A, to stay humble, and also like B, to do better if we are the same elemental blocks as what has always been and needs to be, then it's our job to contribute, not just suck up.
I mean, you could say the black holes are our ancestors or our relations or something. We're from it. We're from it. Like, it's crazy. And like what you just said, that was the other thing I was thinking, is that black holes prove humans haven't excavated every single thing and bled it dry. Mm. It tempers arrogance. Mm. And that, and I really am sick of humans acting like they know everything. Oh, we know everything. It's like, no, you don't.
Or
you
even or even just the fact that like science replaces magic. No, actually,
no, it is.
Our favorite scientists know that magic is ever present.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you hear them talk about it, you know that's how they feel. They talk about it, like I said, blissed out.
Mm.
You know, absolutely blissed out. So it's like this reminder that it's a mysterious force that demands respect. And I even like went so far as to think about it as a religion, because, you know, I think what people like about religion, like organized religion, is it allows them to be driven and instructed by another force greater than themselves. Mm-hmm. But for me, a black hole, it's like that, only it's better. Like,
it's not oppressive.
It's not oppressive. And it allows, it, we're driven by the mystery of it. We're like, I have to kind of like be humble in the face of it.
Mm.
It's so big and it's so mysterious. It keeps eluding us. You know, we think about that quote again. We need new physics.
Mm.
That's wild.
Mm.
And I think that that's something to, if you're going to bow down to anything, you know, do that, like bow down to that. That's like your,
well, yeah,
I don't know, something to,
for me, a huge part of my spirituality comes from two key sources. One that I am no greater or important, like as a cluster of energy, I'm mm-hmm. just as important as a whale, as a tree, as any other natural being with matter and energy, that emits a certain level of magnetism and consciousness. And the fact that we don't even understand consciousness, that like a fungal network is just as conscious as us, like that makes me feel so sacred and connected to everything. So that's like a key yeah. aspect of my religion, as you say. But then like the second part of it is really actually that bowing down to something huge. And for me, it is void and it is mother. There's like a sense of the mother and there is a sense of the void. And maybe it's like the same, like of a binary, but maybe they're just like two distinct attributes. But that void has always been to me what I understand as black hole science, or how I access black hole science.
Well, what you just said is amazing, because something, so they take an imaginary probe into the black hole, and barring getting caught up in debris around the outside, which is called, we know the terms, I just need to remind myself, it's all the debris flying around the outside, the accretion disk, getting through, they think there might be a wall of fire, like once you go in, like you'll burn up, then you'll stretch out. But if theoretically you scratch all those rules and the probe went through, one of two things is, there's two like theories or ideas, all of which could or could not be true, because you're going to the singularity, that point right at the end,
mm-hmm.
where you don't know where anything, they don't know mm-hmm. any of it,
mm-hmm.
right? Could be a wormhole, could be punching through to another place, could be, right? Could also be a white hole, which is the opposite of a black hole. It's spitting everything out. So when you said binary, you think about yin yang, think about like, you know, I've been starting acupuncture and it's about the balance of like dark and light.
Mm.
So think about like a black hole, everything's going in. And we, as we learned, it's not being sucked. It's like, isn't it more like falling in? And then I think it's more like falling in. And then it could be a white hole, which means it's backwards and it's pushing things away. And they think that could be the Big Bang. So yes, there's something about balance that we instinctually play with in our own lives on this little puny planet we're on that are happening on a massive scale in something that feels like an incubator of worlds.
Mm.
Like they're saying things like, was our universe born inside a black hole? Our Big Bang is the remnant of a black hole from a past universe mm-hmm. and spitting out a baby one.
Mm-hmm.
Can we just sit with that idea for a second? That's really fucking cool. Like,
yeah. And that's why, you know, storytellers are really important, because we have these cosmologies, which is like another word for like stories of how we came about and why we continue on. And we can do that in symbolism through, you know, human and magical narratives, and we can do that through science.
Yeah. And another part of this that blows my mind, if you want to think about like kind of imagination, there was this other thing that stood out to me, which is the fact that, again, like I said, suspending the laws, you're going in halfway to the black hole center. You would see everything fallen before it. So you'd see the entire past of the universe go by, the formation of the black hole. So they called it, like, to quote them, a colossal cosmic museum, according to Einstein. All the things are sped up and stacked in layers. A cosmic library.
I've seen that in psychedelic trips, by the way.
Have you really?
Yes, I have.
Probably because it's probably a fundamental part of our formation. Like, we have for some reason I'm thinking of The Neverending Story. I feel like there was something like that in that story, but like that movie, was there a cosmic library? Maybe it was in the book that I read.
Might be in the book, but one thing that's like very interesting to me about The Neverending Story is the concept of world building through imagination, and like the necessity of belief and imagination in creation. So when you lose imagination, you lose worlds. But even when the world is gone, there's still like even just an infinitesimal seed, one tiny grain of sand is the building block to recreate it all again. So it's all good.
I just realized The Neverending Story might be channeling black hole energy, black hole vibes, because the nothing.
Yeah.
And then remember that part when it all goes away and then the princess is there?
Yeah. And she's like, there's one grain of this world of Fantasia left, and that's all we need to begin. So recreate it again, and like Sebastian.
A white hole.
Yeah.
and like just quick shout out. Did you ever read the book? Because if anyone out there who likes Neverending Story, if you haven't or didn't know that it was a book, it is a book and it is worth reading it. Like, it is a wild ride. It is like a psychedelic trip.
It actually might be one of those things that I never did read.
Mm-hmm. It's wild.
But I think my sister did, so I might have to ask my sis what she thought of it. She's on her way. So I feel like part of what we're talking about is like the muscles that you and me use and have been trained in that kind of allow us that gateway into this world. And so if I think about some of like the artistic building blocks that kind of are the reason why we are the way that we are now, for me, it's like color theory is really important in order for us to understand like what is black from a perspective of paint versus light, but then also negative spaces. So when we were drawing, so contouring and negative space, those kinds of skill sets are kind of drawing fundamentals. They're like the foundation of what makes you adept at drawing. And being trained to flip the way that you usually see the world, which is like through outline. So you understand form because like, oh, there's an apple. I can draw it with my mind. There's the apple. But in painting or in drawing, sometimes you're asked to build the background first, and then the form comes out of the negative space that you've just painted in. So that flipping of our mental and literal seeing, perception. I feel like that was a really important thing, like metaphysical thing. It wasn't just a skill set, a language. There was something being formed in our own psyche, in our own sensibility when doing things like that. And actually just like going to see artists who deal with form and space and light and dark. Those were like kind of stepping stones to where we are today. Like, so I just wanted to pay homage to the fact that often arts and the study of art is seen as like a lazier, lesser science, but
not
anyone
true.
Who has actually studied art.
Not true.
No. Incorrect.
I mean, I remember learning about negative space in high school. And we also learned about Notan, which I think is a Japanese concept. But are you checking? Mm-hmm. But it's about like negative space and playing with both of
dark
them.
And light elements.
Both dark and
placed
light elements
next to each other that allow you to see form in a
And am I right that it's Japanese?
Yes.
Based?
It's a design concept.
Yeah, and so we played with that, and I'm really grateful for my art teacher for teaching us that, because she had us do little challenges with, we would cut out black circles of paper and like play with them against each other, the white and the black space. It's a very intuitive thing that's hard to describe.
But it's so good for your brain, right?
But it's really good for your brain, and a lot of times I tell students when I'm teaching them to draw, I say, look at the place where nothing is. That's just as important. And the way I teach it is I say, imagine you're living in a world where you don't look at the thing, you look at the space in between. And you see something shift in their brain when they get it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you have to like start looking. I'm like, don't pretend that this space, like I usually use scissors because it's very contained and easier to look at. And then you graduate to like drawing stools or chairs because there's more spaces, but scissors. And you know, for people listening who have no idea what we're talking about, I'll post a video of how to do it if you want to try it. But you'll look at like the spaces between the objects that there's no physical object there. But if you think about it, I think in Notan, they talk about it like a wheel, like without the spaces between the spokes, there would be no wheel. So it's about balance, and you need both, just like dark and light, good and evil. You need all of it to have what we have.
Yeah, it definitely helps you understand duality, you know, the yin and the yang.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the other, to riff off what you're describing, you know, Zen aesthetics, you know, this idea of like, what are the necessary lines in order to tell a story, and can you abstract all the rest, you know? So like, what if you were only allowed 4 lines to draw, what would be the ones that you would absolutely have to, that make sense of your reality? It's like those two key concepts. I mean, I love ancient civilizations that still thrive today, like Japanese philosophy and Zen Buddhism and all of those kind of, they got it. The core fundamentals of what we're talking about are contained within those philosophies and those practicalities. But I think, you know, on top of that, we have like the things that light us up artistically. Like for you, how do you kind of play around in this space as an artist?
In terms of like black hole science?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think all I can say is visual, like movies and sound. I mean, for me, when Matthew McConaughey, when they put him in that position and have him falling into it, that satisfied a deep curiosity and adventure, like sense of adventure in me. It's like they are putting him in the least possible like scenario, and we are getting to envision what might happen there.
Yeah, that was
fantastic. I think it was a beautifully shot, and like I know it scares some people, and like I am not a roller coaster person. Like it wasn't that kind of like, oh, I want to be like dropped. It was like, this is the ultimate adventure. It's like you are going where no one has gone before. You might not come back,
also,
which terrifies me. But
interesting that Matthew McConaughey sits at the center of two really pivotal space movies.
I wonder how he feels about that. I really want to know if he did that on purpose or it just happens. But like, I think about that all the time.
Some really chunky, meaty roles, like even with like his True Detective.
Oh,
like so he falls into these really interesting phenomenon, like these conversations being held. So like in Contact, it's really like, can if it's not provable, can you still believe in it? He represents faith-based mystery and Jodie Foster represents science-based phenomena. So
and they cross in the end.
Yeah. And then Interstellar, it's like I don't think I could sum up like the core message in Interstellar.
There's multiple cores.
But it's just fascinating that he's at the heart of both of those. Like,
isn't it? And he does a great job. For me, he's like, for my whole life has always been this person who him and Jodie Foster have gone like you know, I mean,
yeah,
yay them. I love them both.
I know. Like, it's and just, you know, they her line when she's like in the spaceship or the capsule where she's like, we should have sent a poet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's everything we're talking about right here. Cause she's when wanting this, you know, experience for so long, but when she gets there, she can't artistically express it. Cause she's been so
nor prove it.
Yeah. And she can't end up proving it.
Yeah.
But she knows it happened.
Yeah.
She had an experience. I'll never forget that. And in the trial where she's like, or the hearing where she's like, I had an experience and I don't know how to explain it to you. And I have a friend, Micah, who maybe you should bring him on here to talk about his beliefs, but you know, he's very religious. He goes to church, but I think he said something once where he was like, science and all of that, like is proof of God for him, which is kind of what I'm saying, which is like, science doesn't, you know, I think maybe for some religious people, maybe it scares them, but for me, it just like opens up this whole world of mystery.
Yeah.
And I don't need a book to explain it or to, I think it gives me enough information on its own.
And that's
for me
actually
to ponder and explore
that thread of science, art, religion, that's been consistent. We actually have a very solid continuum of the sciences, religion, and art being, you know,
bumping up against,
fueled by each other. You know, I remember learning about Hildegard de Bingen, and her kind of cosmic key tones, key ranges, and like, and she was a composer. She was a visionary. She just also happened to be a nun and like really intensely devout. And then there's like Pythagoras, who like over 2000 years ago was like talking about like the harmony and the music of mathematical equations. I mean, we are not, this is not a new realm. We're not tapping into anything that hasn't been discussed, but I think it's important to recognize that
we're revisiting it.
Yeah. And like oppressive narratives distract us from this truth. And I'm here for it. I'm here for the long history of human awe in the face of these unknowns.
And it's important for us to join the conversation now in the era we're in because it's collective consciousness. We're joining in the conversation and putting it out there because it's affecting us. Because we're coming up with all these, not coming up with, finding out all these new things in this time in our lives. We're so lucky we get to see this discovery. You know, there's so much cool, like that, like I'm going to share the link to the most recent photo of the black hole that proves one of Einstein's theories visually. And I'm just like, I wish he could see it. And then I was thinking, maybe he is seeing it because I don't know anything. Like maybe somehow he is seeing it.
I mean, a lot of his, Hawking's got into like some wagers that he had to concede that he didn't know when it came to black holes.
I love it so much.
Me too.
I love the mystery of it. It's actually quite comforting in a lot of ways. I think I'd be more, I don't know, having this is facts. This is it. No room for debate. That sounds so sad to me. It feels like a dead end.
I think when you start off with something as grounded as truth, but then you are willing to expand upon it, is very comforting to me. So it's like, this is what I know to be true now, blah, 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 blah. And like, just this idea that reality is flexible, that truth is a starting point, but not an end point. I think that's very comforting to me.
Me too. I mean, that could feed into just, I might have already told this story, but it was interesting. I remember learning about wormholes because I think I got obsessed with them around Interstellar time when I finally saw that movie. And I remember thinking to myself and then like judging myself, like, you're dumb. Why would you think that? Thinking, it seems like wormholes could take you somewhere else. And then I found an article that said, yes, this is a theory. And I was like, I am not a scientist. This was just an idea I had. Like, and it happened to be something someone else thought of. And that person is millions of times smarter than me in a lot of ways, you know, but I was just like, it made it so like, wow. There's a lot of possibilities, especially when you bring just being creative and open into the equation. Mm-hmm. And then there's this other thing that I thought of when you were talking. One of the scientists said, it was wild. I think he said that all of this, you're like watching this documentary and you're just, your mind is going and you're like, wow, wow. And he's like, you know, none of this, all this might be not true. He's like, it all might not be true. And he said something like, whenever our equations come up to infinity, that just might be nature saying you're wrong. And you know, it was like another, I think it had to do, I think maybe the infinity thing had to do with the singularity. He's like, there might not be a singularity. It just might not be a thing, that the singularity being the very end of the wormhole where we don't know what's there. We have theories. And I was like, I got a little sad when he said that, but I was like, but that's something you have to entertain. Like, that's a possibility too. Like, you entertain all possibilities.
Absolutely. I think.
And see where you end up.
Yeah. No, that's fair. That's very fair. We do it all the time in art, you know, try something, yeah, fail and go, that's true. Okay, moving on, trying something else now.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, on a gut instinct, when I hear them describing these patterns that they're considering, mm-hmm, that these black holes are really like incubators for like universes and worlds, it doesn't feel, it feels so true. It feels right to me. I'm like, yes, that makes a lot of sense. And then when you look at all of the different cultures that have pulled some kind of yin yang balance, black and white, dark and light, we are like regurgitating something we know on a cellular level because our cells are from that. Mm. So there's something we know that we don't realize we know. We're like realizing ourselves because we're part of the universe and we're from the Big Bang. So something in us knows it. And I think it's like this really crazy self-consciousness that we're coming to now, where we're starting to like understand our existence. It's almost scary. It's like cool and wonderful and also a little scary. It's like, what?
Like you said,
what do you do with that information?
Depends on the time of day, depends on your,
yes, it does,
capacity, yeah,
what you're willing to handle,
yeah, like your emotional state dictates, yeah, like, well, okay. But I think what's great about it is that there's so many different avenues that you can go down, like even just kind of searching the internet for instances where artists have worked with astrophysicists, or where artists are astrophysicists, or where communities are, cool, working together to elevate marginalized voices or a level of excellence that wasn't there because it, like, the sciences weren't diverse enough. So, you know, shout out to I've lost the name of their community now, Black in Astro. So Black in astronomy. So like the representation of different communities, that feels so heartwarming and so heartening and so beautiful and moving that, you know, that's accessible to me right now, thinking about inclusivity in science, learning about sonification. You know, these avenues are available to us in ways I'm just so grateful for, because there's really like there's a key for everyone to get into science. And there's no, yeah, shortage of people and ecosystems and communities that will welcome you in. Like, I you know, play around with astronomy with my son when we go to bed. Like, we watch little YouTube videos. I'll link a little YouTube song. Like, so, you know, you can learn about black holes and like little snippets that are like good for children. And these things just...
Oh, I need to see that.
I feel so lucky to be alive in this world where creators can just...
play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. It is play.
And you learn by playing.
Mm-hmm.
Even adults do. Right.
Necessary play. Like I cannot recommend not taking myself too seriously.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you did say something also about just sometimes like the wording when we're talking about science or black holes is like poetic. And I was just
phrases. Like we walk around and talk and use scientific vernacular all the time. Like I talk about magnetism and just like the way that I talk about my own personal vibes. Like, but that's an actual scientific term as well.
Yeah. And also like there's a phrase I loved. The singularity is the heart of the black hole.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's cool. And our understanding of the universe ends here. That's like a doorway. That's a portal.
Mm-hmm.
That's poetry. So
I feel like we went everywhere and also not a lot of play. Like I feel like we opened all the doors and potentially
we did open all the doors.
Didn't like fall through very many. We just were like, and this door and this door and this door.
But that's essentially what this whole thing is. Exactly. I mean, that's all it is. All of these, like we have a photo of a black hole describing all the parts of it. All of them are doorways to we don't know.
Mm.
It's all theory.
Mm.
So, and the closest thing we got to what it might be like is the black hole in Interstellar. And, you know, there's this beautiful scene where you just see his face. He has to eject from his spacecraft because the spacecraft's going to get destroyed. And somehow in the movie, it makes sense that he ejects himself and he's falling and there's just sparks. And like, it's this, you just hear him breathing. And that's like a really, that is a beautifully shot, beautifully imagined experience that can be metaphorical. And you're in the heartbeat of the universe. Mm. You're in like the core of the universe. You're trusting in something you don't understand. You might end, but like, maybe that's fine.
Yeah.
We're a part of something so amazing. And when we're feeling grateful and not stressed and terrified, we can be just like super grateful that we can understand this like epic beauty and like terrifying violence. Like it's just, they say a black hole, the inside is one of the most violent places in the universe.
That's fascinating.
But it's also honest. Like that's it. That's what it is.
And I also feel like it's important to call out that like one person's comfort is another person's discomfort. And one person's resting place is another person's need for more, you know, and that sense of mindset and perspective is everything in this.
Yeah.
And it determines, it's like the vehicle for our actual reality. Imagination is everything.
It really is. It's why we're here now, understanding it the way we are, because people had to kind of think outside the box and say, I mean, everyone uses this example, but at one point humans thought the world was flat.
Mm-hmm.
So someone had to be like, you know what? I don't think that's true. And that was like a revolutionary idea. And people were like, what? And then now we just were like, yep, that's it. So probably a while ago, not probably, we know a while ago, black holes were like, no, now we have a freaking picture of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we hear sounds coming out of it. And we have these really crazy photographs that these badass like telescopes are taking. Like I will share a link to this telescope, this specific telescope that they've, well, it's multiple telescopes positioned all around the world.
Correct.
To make the biggest telescope ever.
Yes.
To get these pictures. It's like this like collaboration of telescopes all around. And I think it takes a long time for all the imagery to come back for them to put it all together.
Accurate.
But I love that they can do that. Yeah. Like, I want to work for them. Like, I'm like, why am I not working for them? That should be my job.
There's a center like, here in New Zealand. Cause I mean, the South Pacific has like a really important role to play cause we have dark skies.
Right. So you, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You gotta go.
Mm. Well, you can't go in, but
you can't go
can
in.
Drive past it.
You don't do tours or anything. Oh, okay.
It's just nice knowing that we're here and like you can, if you're, a researcher, a scientist, you can rent out the telescope, that we have, the power that we have here. It's definitely on my bucket list to go to a dark sky center and get toured by them because the way that they do it here, there's a few different dark sky projects in New Zealand, but one of them is in the heart of an indigenous approach to tourism. So it's like this huge part of the tourism industry in the South Island is run and commercialized through the tribal commerce. And so when you are experiencing the dark sky centers, because you're experiencing it through the commercial ecosystem of an indigenous worldview, you're also being told stories, creation stories, gods and archetypes. So it's really a beautiful offering of, you know, science and spirituality funded together, married together. They're not separate. And I just feel like that's an enhancement.
As it should be. Yeah. I mean, I think that our interpretations over centuries of something that we instinctually understood but don't really understand at the same time, those are just as important, our stories that we've, because we're a part of it, we're part of the fabric, so our stories enhance it.
Yeah, like they say, like,
give it more life.
Don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. Like, science and spirituality can absolutely go together. Yeah,
I would argue they cannot be separate. I would argue they are inherently a part of each other.
I love that.
I mean, that sounds,
I feel like
I just think there's no way they're not.
Anthropology would absolutely agree with you there. Yeah.
I mean, that's how we tried to understand things really early on without any tools or any science. That's how telling stories and observing what we saw, that's, you know, we drew images on cave walls. We came up with stories. That's how we made sense of everything. It's like, it's just important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And progress isn't necessarily, you know, one advanced technology over another. They're in combination with each other.
Also, think about like creation stories. Mm-hmm. Like, isn't it in the Bible, in the beginning, there was darkness?
In almost every world view, so there is a layer of darkness before light.
That's a black hole. I'm telling you, I really think humans have instinctually understood black holes on a very base level without realizing that they did. I think that it's a part of our core.
I mean, like,
in like
key element
DNA writing of ourselves.
Absolutely. A key element of scientific pursuit is observation. And we've been observing the natural world longer than we have articulated our scientific rationale for those things.
And the photo of like a black hole and eye, I'm sorry, but that just constantly puts me in an awe space. Like, it's just so awe-inducing. Like, they really do look the same.
Mm.
And it's like, that's because we're all echoes of each other.
Mm. Yeah, I see what you mean, where the black hole is our pupil.
Yep.
Yeah, that's gorgeous. That's a beautiful image. Yeah.
And then the color is the accretion disk around the outside. So our bodies, like, are built in, it's like when you look like your family members, it's like our bodies are built similarly to aspects of the natural world.
Mm. Oh, beautiful.
Mm-hmm. So I'm feeling like that's black holes.
Yep.
Are there more things you wanted to say about black holes?
I think I would be curious to expand on, like, in a future series, like, the psychological phenomenons that happen around this. So, like, I alluded to, you know, people that suffer from chronic illness have, like, a real emotional disease around, like, the vastness of space, and that being, like, a really triggering, painful concept of, like, that aloneness being a really important thing to, so, like, the psychological impacts of different diseases and how they impact our ability to comprehend vastness, but then also the psychological effect that anyone can experience when faced with, you know, a cavernous black tunnel, or for me, it's swimming over, like, the depthless sea. So, like, just that, like, deeper and deeper and deeper blue into blackness, and, like, not knowing what's beneath that is both magnetic to me and repellent. So, like, the psychology of some of those things, I feel like a really, I think that would be interesting to explore in a later episode, just the psychology, and also, you know, ways in which that we put language to that, artistic and musically, and movies, all the narratives.
Yeah, I mean, that solitary feeling, the feeling of being alone, can be huge when you're looking at this vastness. But
they say that astronauts, when you're in space looking down at Earth, that there's a psychological effect of feeling, like, very calm and very okay with the world. Like, and almost all astronauts recount this experience. I think it's called, like, the overview effect or something like that.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, I'm interested in the psychology of all of this.
Yeah, I get that feeling too. I think it's, like, a many-layered emotional process, and I would like to look into that as well.
Yeah, especially if we're keen on understanding how one finds comfort in a very discomforting world.
Yeah, that's something I need to think about.
Mm-hmm.
I
think it, to be continued.
I think it's a balance. Yeah, I think it's a balance. For me, just to review, I guess, like, these things, these black holes, they break every rule we know.
Mm.
That's what they told you, they tell you in that documentary, that we have not gotten far enough to explain them. And they are multiple things. They are time machines, cosmic museums. They destroy, they create worlds. And they are the ultimate enigma. And the quote is, "Understand black holes and we will understand how our universe works. The math is bizarre. The concepts are mind shredding. But the most extreme physical systems give us the most clues." And again, to, like, kind of to close, as we said in the beginning, nature is much more imaginative than we are. Truth is stranger than fiction. So whenever we feel, like, limited, or like the world is dry, we know everything, there's nothing new, we don't know anything. We are just here exploring. And I think this is proof that, I think one of, you know, think about the arts, since we're artists, how it feels sometimes like they are not valued because it's not important and it's not necessary for life. But I think this is proof that it is. I think that if someone needs proof, I think we don't really, you know, there's all these rules we've made as a society. This is the way it must be. And it's not true. It's a lie. There's, like, a million ways to be. Just like the way the universe functions, we've only been told one way that we kind of, barely understand. But there's multiple ways to view time, there's multiple ways to view space, and there's multiple ways to view how we're here at all. And I think that that's eye-opening and exciting, and we don't have to play by all the dumb rules that we're given.
Mm.
So in some ways, I think black holes can represent liberation from old stale systems that actually don't do us any good.
I endorse that sentiment.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
We'll leave it at that, dear sweet listeners. Thank you for joining us into that little fractaled, multi faceted experience.
Yeah, thank you for listening. And keep checking out the Magic Hour Dreamcast on Substack to get editorial treats.
Indeed. And you'll have all of our show notes and links, and we might throw in some sound effects into this one, and all of those will be linked in our show notes. And having said that, we have a really apt theme song called Whimsical Aliens, written and performed by Alejandro Bernard from Ithaca, New York, and we'll link to his Patreon and YouTube channel so that you can experience more stellar performances.
Yes. And this project is edited and produced by Bjorn. Thank you so much for your support.
Thank you.
And we will see you next time.
See you next time. Bye.
Bye.